Hello and welcome to your daily news analysis. I'm Kavitah Vaib. Days after the assassination of Lebanon's internal security chief, General Wissam al-Hassan, Lebanon is witnessing violence. Clashes erupted in Beirut and in Tripoli. As a result, five people killed so far, further heightening fears that instability in Syria was spreading into Lebanon. At least on the surface, that's the conclusion reached by many. In this news analysis, we'll look at the possibilities of whether the attack in Lebanon was a consequence of the situation in Syria, or whether there are political motives or gains to be made by countries like the United States and Israel, feeding to the opposition inside Lebanon who want the ouster of its Prime Minister, Najib Mighati.
At first glimpse, it seems as if this is a city in Syria, and this man is an insurgent targeting government forces. But this is Tripoli, Lebanon. It has its own insurgents who are fighting government forces. The situation is still tense in parts of the country following the death of police intelligence chief Wissam al-Hassan by a car bomb attack in the capital, Beirut. The incident has polarized the country, with the pro-West March 14 bloc and their supporters pitted against the government of Prime Minister Najib Mighati.
On my way to this location, I also saw flags for the Free Syrian Army and a flag for Al-Qaeda, or the so-called pro-Islamic group flags. Right next to the flag of Al-Mustaqbal, the future movement, I think, which shows you that there is some kind of unannounced alliance between the so-called Free Syrian Army and Al-Qaeda and Al-Mustaqbal.
After the funeral of the assassinated police chief, opposition leaders, including former Prime Minister Fuad Sinyura of the March 14 movement, called for Mighati to resign. Violent clashes between opposition supporters and government forces followed. Earlier, the leader of the future movement, Saad Hariri, and that of the Progressive Socialist Party, Walid Jumblat, openly accused Syria of being behind Hassan's assassination without providing any evidence, and while no investigation has been conducted yet.
It's a sad thing that in Lebanon, nobody waits for evidence. Immediately, even the parties on this, you know, who support Wissam al-Hassan, for instance, are jumping in before his, you know, body's even cold.
My organization, EAR Magazine, we're still investigating who actually, if in fact this attack was carried out by the Syrian government. And I have my suspicions that it probably wasn't, but I don't know for sure, because I see no benefit coming to the Syrians for this.
Those who claim Damascus was behind the murder say Hassan had implicated the Syrian government in the 2005 assassination of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri. The opponents of the theory, however, argue that the timing of the police chief's murder is suspicious, saying that Syria is now in the midst of a conflict with a foreign-backed insurgency, which has forced Damascus to devote its time and energy to defeat it. They also argue that Lebanon is now being targeted by those who achieved little in Syria, where they aim to topple the government of President Bashar al-Assad. They also say a divided Lebanon would be most beneficial to Israel, the West's main ally in the Middle East.
Let's find out what our guests think of perhaps who they think may be behind this. Let me introduce them. From Al Akhbar newspaper, we have Omar Annashbi joining us from Beirut. We have author, historian, and journalist Webster Tarpley joining us from Washington. We have advisor to the U.S. Congressional Research Service, Kenneth Katzman, who joins us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome. Omar Annashbi, let me start with you. I'd like to look at the funeral ceremony and a statement that was made by the Prime Minister, Michel Suleiman, which was very telling. He said that Mr. Wissam al-Hassan paid the ultimate price for uncovering terror cells. And we know many Israeli spy rings have been actually uncovered in Lebanon that have been Israeli spy rings. And Wissam al-Hassan cooperated in addition with Hezbollah in uncovering these spy rings. So the possibility for Israel to be behind this can't be really ruled out, can it?
No, obviously not. I mean, Wissam al-Hassan, clarification. Wissam al-Hassan is a general. He is not the chief of the internal security forces. He is the chief of the information unit that was created. It is an intelligence unit that he created within the ISF. He didn't create it. It was there, but he made it. He developed it. He made it more powerful since 2005, since the assassination of Prime Minister Hariri. He was very close to Prime Minister Rafiq al-Hariri. He was the chief of protocol. And he left the ISF, he resigned, and he, after the assassination of Hariri, he went back to the ISF and he developed this intelligence unit. And he had links to other intelligence units all over the region. And he was able to track down a large number of Israeli agents. And he was able to do the investigation, send the investigation to the military tribunal, and the military tribunal found some of these people guilty. So this is one of his achievements. However, the political group that is a pro-Hariri claims that his most important achievement is that he was able to track down a former minister, Samaha, who was smuggling explosives from Syria. This issue is still under investigation. It is in the tribunal. The tribunal has not issued a decision yet, a final decision on that. So I think, yes, to go back to your question, yes, we cannot rule out the possible involvement of Israel in this crime. However, this matter is very sensitive in Lebanon because the country is divided. So one group is saying it's Israel and the other group is saying it's Syria. And it's better to wait for the results of the criminal investigations. Noting that the 14th March are blaming the prime minister for this crime. They said that the Prime Minister Najib Miqati, they hold him personally responsible of the assassination of Mr. Hassan. And that is ridiculous, because the Prime Minister, all what the Prime Minister is doing is trying to say that Lebanon cannot interfere in Syrian affairs, neither pro-Assad nor pro-armed rebel groups. So he's trying to take a neutral stance. And that obviously does not please the 14th March, who want to get more involved in Syria, want to be more active in overthrowing, or the attempts in overthrowing the Assad regime in Syria.
Well, you rounded up the political advantages that the March 14th wants to make out of this, which we're going to get to in a second. I'd like to still continue with this investigative outlook. Webster Griffin Tarpley, tell us your thoughts about the manner this was carried out in terms of the facts behind it, the meticulousness of this assassination. It doesn't rule out the fact that these killers were professionals. I mean, looking at the facts, Hassan had only arrived back in Lebanon the evening before. No one knew that he was coming back. He was in an unmarked car. And of course, he was gunned down, or I'm sorry, the explosion that took place was in a car bomb that occurred in a narrow street. What do these facts, when you look at it, lead you to in terms of any ideas that you may have of who may be behind this?
Well, it sounds, from what you're saying, like an inside job, quite possibly. But Lebanon is, of course, a labyrinth of factions. Concerning the general who has been assassinated, I think two things. One is that he was instrumental in rolling up a significant Israeli spy ring inside Lebanon. The other question is that he seems to have been a mediator between Saad Hariri, the leader of a part of the Christian community, and Hezbollah. And of course, if you're going to avoid a return to civil war in Lebanon, there's got to be some kind of an understanding between the Maronite Christians and Hezbollah, and hopefully also the Sunnis, right? Those are your three groups, and perhaps even the Druzes. It's also very interesting to see that after this event, the immediate response of the Saad Hariri forces is they want to overthrow the government. They want to overthrow the government. They were all set to go with a new government. Now, the current government has a significant Hezbollah component in it, and that has guaranteed a modicum of internal peace to Lebanon. However, we have to remember that Saad Hariri, despite what the Western journalism tells you, is not the only representative of the Christian community. I would personally regard the authentic and authoritative voice of the Lebanese Christians to be General Michel Aoun. And General Aoun has been adamant in the last day or two saying that the current government should not fall, that there's no reason to oust the current government. It's very clear, to me at least, that NATO and the Israelis would strive for the partition of Lebanon, the breakup of the country into subdivisions. And in particular, they've had their eye on northern Lebanon, right, that Tripoli, Lebanon area, where there is a significant air base, which right now is not developed. But NATO would like to get that, make that into an air base, and develop it. It's also clear that Saad Hariri has been up to his neck in arms smuggling into Syria, right? One of the reasons why there's been so much trouble in the area of Homs and Hama is that that's the Lebanese border area where much arms smuggling and related stuff has gone on. So it is an attempt to spread this destabilization. However, not the Syrian government. When we had the Rafiq Hariri assassination, the Syrian government was the big loser. They were ejected from Lebanon at that point. The idea that Syria would want to repeat that at this point with a high-profile political assassination inside Lebanon, I think is absurd. And I think I've heard many, many sort of pro-NATO commentators on the air this morning that this is an open and shut case. That is simply not true. And there's a significant body of evidence that the cui bono or cui protest question points to NATO and the Israelis.
Well, along with that, the French Prime Minister, Kenneth Katzmann, has said Syria was probably involved in this car bombing that killed General Wissam al-Hassan, and also in a statement said that Assad was a manipulator who wanted to spread the contagion to Turkey, Jordan, and Lebanon. Your thoughts on that? Isn't that a bit of a stretch?
First, let me say I'm speaking privately on this interview. I'm not representing anyone in Congress or the Congressional Research Service. But okay. I found it quite outrageous, the assertion by the previous speaker that somehow NATO was behind this for the purpose of carving out some sort of an air base. I follow NATO. I talk to NATO officials quite a lot, and I haven't heard anything about designs on an air base. NATO has never committed any assassinations of government officials. So the idea that NATO was somehow involved, I think, is just bizarre. Now, Israel, obviously, I don't see an Israeli connection here either, because I think it's completely against their interests. Now, Syria, I would agree with those who say let's not jump to very quick conclusions about, you know, Assad and Syria, but certainly it would seem that they have an interest. I think Hezbollah, you know, as a supporter of Assad and one who Wissam al-Hassan has, he's viewed as one who wants to curb Hezbollah's authority in Lebanon. Certainly Hezbollah would seem to have an interest. And the Hariri investigation, Hariri assassination was heavily investigated. There were some indications of Hezbollah cooperation in that, and the way this was carried out seems to be very much similar. But I think to your question, yes, Assad is trying to internationalize the conflict in Syria. What he's trying to do is show that the outside efforts to support the rebels in Syria are creating a broader conflict and are going to create problems for the Western countries and for, Israelis and others. And so he's trying to get the outside parties to stop supporting the rebels. That's his game. And
do you agree that these outside rebels are supported by some of these Western countries, not to include, of course, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey?
Well, I mean, you know, those three of them, they've been very open about their support for the rebellion. I think Western countries, you know, the United States has been, Mrs. Clinton has been extremely open. President Obama has said Assad must go. Mrs. Clinton represents the United States at the Friends of Syria meetings. I mean, it's quite obvious that the United States has openly said, you know, we're pushing for a resolution at the Security Council, which has been blocked by Russia and China, but certainly the U.S. has been pushing for a resolution that would indicate that Assad should go and a roadmap to his leaving and a transition. So I think the Western countries haven't really hidden their intentions or goals here.
Okay, so based on that, Omar Nashabi, we also know that Hassan was responsible for terrorist cells that are related to Al-Qaeda or some of the groups under that umbrella. So we just heard our guest say that he agrees that, Western countries are behind this, perhaps not to mention Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey. So doesn't that show that there's some interest there by these Western countries to have Hassan, so to speak, assassinated?
Yes. I can't hear you very well, but if I heard the question right, I just want to tell you that I think that one must respect the presumption of innocence, and one must wait a little bit for the investigation to make some progress. I think we're still at an early stage, and there's a new general prosecutor in Lebanon. He was on the crime scene. There was the military prosecutor who was also on the crime scene. They collected some evidence. The prime minister asked also for any help the investigators would need, even if that would call for foreign assistance in the, with regards to the advance of the investigation. So I think it would be inadequate and inappropriate at this point to actually accuse or pretend that one knows or one is sure that the responsibilities goes to the Syrians or to the Israelis or to other complications, especially since Mr. Hassan was an intelligence officer and he worked and he had connections to all other intelligence operatives in the region. And therefore, one would think that this is a complicated matter that cannot be, you know, I would say it would be better not to generalize, especially when one accuses Hezbollah of being involved. One must actually review the relationship between Mr. Hassan and Hezbollah. In 2008, there was violent clashes in Beirut. Mr. Hassan was coordinating fully with Hezbollah leaders and Hezbollah security operatives in order to find a way to stabilize the situation. And therefore, the relation between Hassan and Hezbollah is a very good relationship, and they are in continuous contact. Although they have different conviction, but they have been in touch. And I don't think it is to the interest of Hezbollah to assassinate someone like Hassan, who is, as your guest from Washington said, who was a mediator. He was a mediator between the Sunnis and the Shia. And it is Hezbollah that has warned and still warns of any tension between Sunnis and Shia, because that would create a situation that is not to the interest of Hezbollah. It would create a civil war in Lebanon. It could create extensive tension, and that is not to the interest of Hezbollah, because Hezbollah has repeatedly said that its objective is to stand firm against Israel. It only has one enemy, and that is Israel, the same enemy that violates international law, violates Security Council resolutions, and refuses to make any effort to push the peace process forward.
Okay, Kenneth Kasem, I'm going to ask you for your reaction on that, but I'd like to come to Webster Griffin Tarpley. Please give a reaction to what Kenneth Kasem said prior to one of the things that you mentioned about NATO and, of course, his other statements there, of which only on Israel, he says, Israel wouldn't benefit it, if I'm correct to recall what Kenneth Kasem said.
Well, concerning NATO and political assassinations, two of the most documented cases are, of course, multiple attempts to assassinate President de Gaulle of France, and the one that I've studied myself, written a book about it, the assassination of the former Prime Minister Aldo Moro of Italy back in 1978. And that capability stretches into the present day. And I would look at it this way. It's October before a presidential election. And nobody in the world should forget that the October surprise that either camp, right, be it Obama, be it Romney, could be organizing necessarily involves events somewhat along these lines. We've had Libya. Now we have Lebanon. Let's see what happens with Lebanon, right? There's a debate about this tonight. Let's see if Romney brings up Lebanon. We'll learn something about who's behind these things by who tries to exploit them, perhaps. And again, in the absence of any proof of any guilt anyway, I think we have to listen to General Aoun and say that the current government needs to stay in power. There has to be stability. The problem with getting rid of the present government is that there's no clear alternative to it. And if you got a government dominated by Saad Hariri, Saad Hariri is NATO's man in Lebanon. He's the IMF's man in Lebanon. A March 14th dominated government in Lebanon would be a kamikaze government. It would simply be used to spread the fighting and destabilization that NATO has created in Syria and spread that around the Eastern Mediterranean. And of course, the Israelis have been looking for ways to try to encircle Hezbollah for quite a while. They've tried militarily and they've failed. So now they're trying other stratagems. So this is all a terrible thing for Lebanon. The essential thing for Lebanon is to arrive at some kind of unity among the principal groups in the population. And stability is what counts. Because if you're not stable, you'll become the tool of foreign interests one way or another. And I think that's what Aoun is talking about.
Okay, Kenneth Kassman, if you can respond to that. And also regarding the fact that Al-Qaeda is, part of those groups that are being backed by these Western countries.
Yeah, I didn't realize NATO was behind the Syria uprising. I mean, maybe Mr. Treasley can tell us where Jimmy Hoffa's body is, or maybe he can tell us when the aliens are landing on the Earth or something. As far as I understand, and as far as every international institution and every country on the planet understands, the Syria uprising started as just that, an uprising by the Syrian people. It was not started by NATO. So maybe we can beam Mr. Treasley up to the spaceship at some point. Now, as far as Israel goes, you know, again, I totally agree with anybody that says, let's wait for the investigation. Let's not jump to conclusions. I think there was an attempt by March 14th to, you know, turn this into some sort of an insurrection against the Mekati government. I think that's being tamped down. I think cooler heads are starting to prevail. I think all involved don't want to push this to the brink. But I think it is going to erupt again after Assad falls, frankly, because once Assad falls, it's going to be a Sunni-led government in Syria, and that government is inevitably going to want to punish those who were supporting Assad. Hezbollah is one of those groups, and the new government in Syria is going to use the state machinery to support Hariri March 14th against Hezbollah. So to that, I mean, clearly, I think the Syria conflict is going to spill over, is spilling over into Lebanon. I'm not disputing that. But these conspiracy theories about strange parties conducting this assassination, I think, is quite wild, quite a wild theory.
Okay, well, Omar Nashabi, quickly, if you can, I'd like to come to you. The Western-backed March 14th coalition, I mean, honestly, how strong are they? We saw the protests that happened after the funeral. Roughly about what, in the thousands, the supporters came out. They were not all unified in some of the chants and slogans that they were saying, and they were even brought in from buses from around Beirut. March 14 is not a unified party at this point with a huge base of supporters, is it?
Well, yes, they are having some problems. And the biggest problem that I think March 14 have is the breaking away of Mr. Walid Jumblat, who represents the Druze from the March 14th. In the past years, and he doesn't want to go back and rejoin them, and they cannot remove the government if Mr. Jumblat is not on their side. But I want to take this opportunity to thank Mr. Kenneth Katzman, who actually gave us a prediction, his perspective on the prediction of what's going to happen after Assad falls, if Assad falls. But what he's saying, what he just said, and I found that very interesting, he said after Assad will fall, there will be a new government in Syria that will come to run after and to hunt down those who supported Assad, or to take revenge from those who were sided with Assad. And that's very interesting, because he is putting forward a very interesting prediction that says that perhaps it could mean that the objective of the taking over the regime in Syria is to come after Hezbollah. So I think it's very interesting that someone who is an advisor for the Congress is saying that so openly. I really want to thank him sincerely.
Well, very good. We're going to leave it at that. There you have it, a news analysis that not only came out on who isn't behind it, but also a prediction. Thank you very much. Let me thank our guests. You were just listening to Omar Nashabi from the Al-Akhbar newspaper there in Beirut. Also like to thank Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian, and Mr. Kenneth Kassman, whom we'd like to see in person in terms of at least having an SNG contact, seeing your face, Kenneth Kassman. But thank you for your thoughts from Washington. And thank you for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis from Mikhail Tarbay and the entire team. It's goodbye.